You're listening to SBS News.
When COVID-19 first emerged, one less worry was that children were at lower risk of severe disease and death. But with school students making up the majority of cases in Queensland's latest outbreak, some people are concerned that the Delta variant has a higher infection rate among children. Does the increased visibility of cases among children mean they're more at risk, though? Well, not exactly, says the Director of the Child and Adolescent Health PhD program at the University of Melbourne, Professor Fiona Russell.
There is a study that's shown that the viral load, so the amount of virus that you've got, is about 1,000 times more for Delta. And so for any age group, for anyone that's got it, it will be more transmissible for anyone.
Director of Epidemiology at the Doherty Institute, Professor Jodie McVernon, says while it's concerning when children become infectious, it's really 20 to 39-year-olds who are the main transmitters. She says part of the reason children appear to be making up a larger percentage of positive cases in some parts of the world is due to successful adult vaccination programs.
Clearly in countries where there have been high levels of immunisation uptake and where schools have been one of the more free social venues, we have seen many reports of increasing representation of children in the disease cases, and we would expect that within that context.
But if children do contract the coronavirus Delta variant, what are the long-term impacts? Experts say there's not enough data yet to determine how conditions like long COVID will be in children. But there are some lessons from overseas in terms of the severity of the illness. Professor Fiona Russell says even with the Delta variant circulating, it's still extremely rare for children to need hospitalisation or die from COVID-19, especially if they don't have any underlying health conditions.
Looking at the data from the UK and the US, there has been an increase in hospitalisations in all ages, including children and young people. But the rates of hospitalisation are still 3 times higher in the older age groups compared to the younger age group.
So what should parents be looking out for?
Fever and sore throat seem to be still dominant symptoms for everyone with COVID, but I do think that children are probably more likely to have, a runny nose and some headaches from some of the sort of epidemiological studies that are coming out from overseas as well.
That's Dr. Asha Bowen, head of the Department of Paediatric Infectious Diseases at the Perth Children's Hospital and head of Vaccines and Infectious Diseases at the Telethon Kids Institute. She says transmission risks need to be balanced against children's overall well-being.
We know that sort of online learning is nowhere near as efficient for the youngest children. And for those children who are living in situations of disadvantage, where school is a safety measure, as well as they're able to actually access all of the resources that they need to learn, the closing of schools is a big risk to their overall educational attainment because every school day matters. And so it's trying to balance that sort of need for face-to-face learning and need for schools to be opened with the attempts to control the transmission of the virus and to minimise population movement.
Professor Fiona Russell agrees.
There's been such a demand for mental health services for children and teenagers that there aren't enough psychologists to go around and services, and so there aren't appointments. There's nothing available for this year for these children because there's been such a surge in mental health problems in this younger population, and so distressed families instead are turning up in the emergency departments because they can't get appointments. And so this is, we're having a silent mental health epidemic.
Dr. Asha Bowen says one way to prevent school closures could be a multi-layered mitigation plan. It could operate like a traffic light system, depending on the degree of community transmission.
When there's a moderate level, then the mitigation processes that are really important are minimising the number of adults on campus, minimising the amount of, contact between people, so that physical distancing, using masks for the ages that it's appropriate, which is mostly high school students. Hand hygiene and hand washing remain critical aspects, as well as everyone sort of symptom assessing and staying home if they have any symptoms that could be a possible association with a respiratory illness. Those things are key strategies. And then I think building on top of that is thinking about the way the school classrooms are ventilated and whether there's different ways of keeping windows open or changing those filtration strategies.
Dr. Bowen says teachers and other school staff should also be vaccinated as a priority. Professor Fiona Russell agrees.
We have to have a plan. We can't just keep closing schools forever. This virus is going to be around forever. It won't go away, even though we hope to get to 70-80% of vaccination coverage. Hopefully we will, but even with that, the virus will still circulate. And so we have to prepare our schools now.
What about vaccinating children? Well, so far, the Therapeutic Goods Administration has only approved the Pfizer vaccine for children aged between 12 and 18. And it's only children who have underlying medical conditions such as severe asthma or epilepsy, are immunocompromised, Indigenous, or live in remote communities that are currently eligible under Phase 1B of the rollout. As for those even younger, Professor Fiona Russell says,
we don't have a vaccine yet available for children under 12. It's still undergoing clinical trials. We have to know what the risks and benefits are, so that'll be a long way off.
Australia's Chief Medical Officer, Professor Paul Kelly, says the current strategy, vaccinating the most at-risk children, could change as time goes on.
As more evidence accrues from countries that have gone down a different pathway, for example, in the US, where they are doing a blanket approach to all children. In the coming months, they will, of course, continue to look at that information and make assessments as is necessary.
But Professor Jodie McVernon says right now, modelling shows that vaccinating all children in Australia aged from 12 to 15 isn't an efficient way to reduce transmission. She says children are better protected by vaccinating parents who are mostly 20 to 39-year-olds. The biggest spreaders of coronavirus.
Children are very important, and so a strategy that protects them as well as elders in the population and the middle and the working age people, we believe to be the best strategy at this time.
Professor Fiona Russell says that strategy is supported by studies with Pfizer in Israel and AstraZeneca in the UK.
We have two highly effective vaccines at the moment. So in terms of protecting our children and what we can do right now, is for adults and parents to get vaccinated with either of these vaccines, whichever they're eligible.
For health and support measures currently in place in response to the COVID-19 pandemic in your language, visit sbs.com.au/coronavirus. Amy Hall, SBS News.